if he just learned to follow directions. Check your paper. Just like his older brother used to be. Tore through his math test like a bull in a china cabinet. Take it to the school board, but I already know what they'd say. His dad's too engrossed in business to pay any attention to helping his boys do better in school. Makes me feel like putting a lot of effort into the field trip next week. A lot of thanks I get. Do you recognize something there that might be a pitfall of a first-year teacher? All right, a career teacher. Sorry about that. Actually, I think I had that in first year, too. If you look on your handout there, Wendell, may I have one of those, please? Notice the first definition that I wrote down and see if you can figure out what word or words we're defining. It says exhaustion of physical or emotional strength or motivation, usually as a result of prolonged stress or frustration. What do you think that's describing?
Burnout.
You know, I've thought already, if you compare teaching with racing, you're familiar with the 50-yard dash, and then you also know what a marathon is. If you're planning on quickly teaching 1 year and getting in your term of voluntary service so you can go on with life, go ahead and treat it like a 50-yard dash. You know, replace those last 2 hours of sleep you needed with a cup of coffee. And continue, just ride out the emotional roller coaster. But if we're going to teach for long term, there's got to be something more than that. If we're in it for more of a marathon, it takes endurance. Let's just look under burnout there. One of the things that I notice is many of the strains and stresses we experience in the schoolroom we bring on on ourselves. Stress makes the load heavy, and working under pressure often takes joy out of our work. I read that in Handbook to Creative Teaching, and it resonated with me. There's some things that we can do to help so we don't get burned out. Some of them are so obvious that we ignore them. For instance, getting enough sleep. What I'm doing is virtuous, isn't it? So if I'm sacrificing sleep for it, then it must be even more virtuous. Be careful about getting enough sleep. Proper diet. Exercise. Fellowship. Don't skip, for instance, if your church has Wednesday evening meetings or Friday evening meetings, don't skip those. You'll come home needing that refreshment. Have a diversion or a hobby. If school is your life, there's something missing. One thing that helps us keep from getting burned out is if we make wise investments. And what I mean by that is when I invest time in doing this, what I often don't think about is that I'm taking time away from this. So choosing to invest here means choosing not to invest there. I have a friend who's getting married, looking forward to moving into his new house, but he wanted it nice for his new bride. So we could change the kitchen like this. And wouldn't it be nice to have a new floor? Anyway, long story short, we invested a lot in that and didn't have the time or energy for some other very important investments. And so, as a teacher, oh, I could do this, I could do this. This other teacher did this, and that was neat. But that investment also means that you're going to have to choose not to do something else. Just be realistic about those things. Our church recently studied in Bible study in Ephesians, where it says, speak the truth in love. We'll probably circle around to this again later. But you will, the stresses will continue to mount as you continue to take on yourselves things that you should be addressing to other people. And I'm talking mostly now about adults in your life. You can't deal with reality in a way that leads to positive change by refusing to face reality. One of the things I'd like to just read to you a little bit of something that I meant to say in my little introduction there about scoring papers. I'd take it to the school board, but I already know they wouldn't help much. His dad's too engrossed in business to pay any attention to helping the boys do better in school. What attitude is that? I'd talk to him, but it wouldn't do any good. Thank you. I've become cynical. Avoid being cynical. That attitude of it wouldn't help much. The one other thing that I might just add, and here's where my cynicism leads to. Listen to these two thoughts that I expressed here. So that the boy has a problem in math. I'm cynical about talking to the school board or his dad about it. And then the next thought was, this really makes me feel like putting a lot of effort into that field trip for next week. A lot of thanks I'll get. Now, can you help me understand how exactly math tests and field trips are related? The fact of the matter is, they're not really. But because of the way I'm thinking about this, and this happens especially late at night, somehow these two things become related. When that begins to happen, pay attention to why it's happening. We've talked briefly about burnout. Another thing that career teachers tend to have without meaning to, notice I'm giving us the benefit of the doubt, is an overbearing attitude. I almost said bullying, but I know you sisters can't imagine yourselves bullying anyone. So maybe even overbearing is a stretch. Or sometimes we hear the word controlling. But I was talking to someone who was on the school board when I first started teaching at the school where I am now. And he said, you were kind of intimidating sometimes. Now, we have basically the same relationship now as we had 6 or 7 years ago when I was intimidating him. He never told me then. But he did now when I asked him. Ladies, I don't know if you know it, but you can intimidate us sometimes. And especially when you know way more about the curriculum than the school board does. I've watched it happen. We need to be super careful we had something interesting happen last year. I have a student who, he's super sharp. It's really difficult to keep enough work there to even keep him interested. Now, I know we hear more topics about slow learners, but this one was causing me a lot of challenges, just trying to keep work in front of him and keep it interesting for him. So I thought, well, I'm going to ask the school board. Now, well, it's like Dan said, at one point he had more experience than everybody else in the room combined. And so I asked. One of the school board members said, when I was in school, my teacher had me do this. And I went home and thought about it, and I ordered those books that he talked about. And within 2 weeks, that student was working in those books. And several weeks later, I told that board member, I said, you know, that's working out really well. And he got all kinds of apologetic. He said, I wasn't saying you have to do that. I didn't mean to press that on you. Like he wasn't there to help me. And so when you have opportunity to listen, listen. And I need to do more of that. So ask them questions, listen to their answers. I was reading in the book of Acts recently, and there's something so interesting that happened to someone who was eloquent and fervent in spirit and taught diligently. Now, you might be thinking, I didn't know I was in the Bible. But this man had those qualifications, but here's the neat thing that happened. It was Apollos, and he was speaking eloquently. And when Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him unto them and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. Isn't that neat? You know, we just read the qualifications that Apollos had. When it was time for him to have this couple take him aside and explain to him some things, we don't really read how it went, but it doesn't seem like there were any major blow-ups. It seems like he accepted that, and then the Lord just continued to use him here. I'm blessed by that little illustration. Let's be willing to accept those things. You know, another problem that we can have, maybe before I go into this one, I just want to point out, excuse me, I left a few empty blanks here. And the reason I did that is so that we aren't going to have time to talk about every pothole and pitfall that we could have, but I'd like to be thinking. Be thinking, is there something else that you've noticed? Either a tendency that you personally have or you've seen in someone else? Unfortunately, I can talk personally on too many of these. Here's another one. Pride. We get the idea, if I don't do it, who will? Which implies no one else could do it as well as I do. Beware of feminism. One way that comes out is the attitude, well, he's a man, he wouldn't understand. Now, there's an element of truth to that. But be real cautious. If you find in your heart, that's kind of what it boils down to. Think about what we heard in the topic about authority this morning. Are you willing to go with what the school board suggests even though you know that's just an inferior curriculum, or even though you know that, well, I tried that one time 5 years ago and it didn't work. Be careful about that.
Is there a counterpart of that for us guys? If I'm following your this word for feminism, like what?
For us, we just call it pride. Is there a better word for it? Or are there maybe some other subtle ways that it shows up?
Arrogance.
Which is interesting because that next point that I have is beware of an elitist attitude. I don't know if that, I looked it up and it wasn't in my dictionary that I had, but you understand what we're saying. I'm just a little bit better. If at lunchtime we mostly enjoy just talking to each other, or even if we kind of come across with that attitude, arrogance is an excellent way to describe what we want to avoid there. Point number four here is laziness. And before you get too defensive, let me say that's one thing that I don't see a lot of in most career teachers. Especially when we're talking about, let's say the hours that you put in this school and the effort that you put forth. There is a point, though, that I know I need to work on, and that is keeping my material fresh. You know, the first years I taught school, I had to read every lesson to know what's coming down the pike today. I don't now. And then guess what happens? Oh, this is the lesson that has that neat experiment with it, and my things are all at home. Or that kind of thing. So try to make sure that none of those things slip through the cracks. Do enough reading that you can add illustrations that you just got this week or this past summer. You know, my students were looking through some old photos that we had. They brought a photo out, said, "Dad, is this the group of people that you always tell a story about in that one lesson on record keeping?" And I said, "Yeah, but I don't always tell that story." He said, "Yes, you do, Dad." So one thing about having your own children in school, it kind of keeps you on your toes. Now, that's not to say you can't reuse a good illustration. But do notice that if you have the same students in your classroom for a number of years and you're using the same illustration each time, they, oh yeah, there he goes again. Anything else on how you find the temptation to be lazy?
Procrastination on the harder tasks or the more uncomfortable ones. The phone call, report cards.
Procrastination. I have a desk a little smaller than this one. And my procrastination stack on that desk is right here. It's a report from someone who's in a grade by himself that needs to be graded sometime before next week. And it's an art project that came in late. And procrastination. Number five, an attitude of they owe me. And when I say they, I'm talking about the school board and probably the church and especially the patrons. We can get a bit of an attitude like that. I wonder if any of you have had this experience. Did you ever notice how some of the perks that you had as first-year teachers have disappeared along the way? For you sisters, it might be they used to change the oil every time my car needed it. And now I have to go ask somebody if I want anything done on my car. Or maybe, I don't know, I've had financial perks, you know, where the treasurer said, there was money left over at the end of the school year. Here, we're going to split it out among the teachers. Didn't happen last year, that's for sure. But, so, we get to kind of feeling like they owe it to us. Here's one of the eye-openers for me was asking different board members and career teachers and pastors about this topic. And one person I asked got animated. And he began telling me a story. And I thought maybe he misunderstood my question. Because the story he told me was how he went into City Hall the other day and tried to get help for a project that he was doing. And those people gave him the runaround. If they'd have been a business, nobody would have showed up at their door forever. But nobody could touch him. Here they were supposed to be the servants of the people, and you go in there for help. And what do you get? Now, can you guess where he was going? He was pretty close to the end of the story before I figured out what the punchline was going to be. They forgot who writes their paycheck. And for us, it's fair to broaden that and say we sometimes forget who is our authority. We sometimes forget to appreciate those people. Now, in their defense, I'll say they have a tendency to do like we as teachers do sometimes. That man who changed your oil, he's still thinking, I'm a pretty good guy because I changed the teacher's oil. And we're still thinking, I'm a pretty good person because I taught school last year and the year before. And maybe one of you know the word. What's the word for giving myself credit for something good that I did long ago, even though I'm not necessarily doing it right now? Anyway, if you think of it, let me know. I was searching for that word. I know I've read it somewhere. But don't we get into that trap sometimes? I'm good because one time I did a good thing. Now, here's another one that we sometimes struggle with, and be prepared to share some that you have now. Being a good steward of the information that you have. A real pitfall for teachers is not handling everything you hear at school wisely. And you ask any of the church leaders about how school teachers can wreck things if they start getting involved in trying to fix church matters at school. It's not pretty. But the fact of the matter is you and I, if you are just there at lunchtime, we're probably going to know things about what happens at home and how people feel about things. We'll probably know more than the ministers do. What are we going to do with that information? Will I hop into the fray? Or will I say we don't talk about things like that at school? What if even in our school subject, we come across something? See, this agrees with what I've been trying to tell your dad. How do we handle something like that? And I think especially as we have opportunity to, none of you are as old as I am. But when you say, you've got the same problem your dad had when I taught him. We need to be good stewards of the information that we have. And sometimes that means purposely laying that aside. All right, what have you thought of that can be a stumbling block for career teachers?
One thing that has been a stumbling block for me is the realization that as I correct one student's problems, the next year I have another set of students moving into my classroom that have the same problems, and you're just dealing with the same old every year. That was a real struggle actually for me to get past that, was that realization that this is always going to be a part of my job. I'm never going to fix that generation. I'm going to be out.
Mm-hmm. And you know, okay, you see it with behavioral issues and teaching and procedures and things, but I even find myself with the same attitude in math class. Come on, I taught this last year. Well, yeah, but not to them. We should know that that's not reasonable, but somehow we just need, it's good to remind us of that. Thank you. Be aware, these students are new to your classroom and your style of teaching, even. Yes?
There was a man that taught public school history for years, just history, so he knew everything there was to know. Okay. Well, somebody said if he didn't know a date, he made one up close enough and went fast enough, none of us could quite keep up. I don't know if that was true either. But if people accuse him, at least, I don't know if it's fair, of he had to know everything, he couldn't ask or check. And I think we can get that way, what we know, we've taught. Well, maybe you forgot.
Okay.
Maybe you do know, or maybe you don't. Exactly. Not feel like we do or should know all the answers to every history and science background.
Or even how to pronounce a word.
One thing that I think is important, so I teach a fairly large span of grades, and so I have the same students year after year after year, and Brother talked about them being new students that you're ready to fix this problem in. I find that I've fixed this problem 5 times already in the same student, but it needs fixed again. One thing that was brought to my attention a couple of years ago is that it's very important not to keep adding expectation upon expectation upon expectation. So as you go from 1 year into the next, you need to start with a clean slate. You can't just now, okay, so last year we learned all these things, and now you need to go from where we stopped last year and learn all these new things as far as procedures and behaviors and whatever. And eventually you can almost become a strangling, suffocating presence because you keep adding expectation upon expectation upon expectation. It becomes impossible to fulfill. I'm not sure if I made myself clear. I'm not very succinct in the way I presented it, but that idea.
That makes sense. So you understand, don't let your expectations snowball. I like what you mentioned. Start this year fresh. And at the same time, make those expectations that you do have clear. Don't just assume that they remember from last year.
Ooh.
Don't let your grudges snowball either.
I have a question about what you were saying there about your expectations. So do you mean like, what I think I found myself do is I learn more about teaching and about makes a good school, I guess, or at least what my idea is of it. I keep thinking, oh, it would be cool if the students would learn to do this. If I could add this thing, they could have this required reading. And is that kind of what you're saying? Like adding all these things you want them to learn and it becomes too much?
Yeah, I think they could get into that possibly. I guess what I'm maybe I'll give you an example to get more where I'm coming from. So first year, the teacher is just a hit. Everybody loves her, let's say. And it's just a wonderful, it's God's gift to the school, really. Mm-hmm. And the second year, things aren't quite as smooth. By the third year, she's doing a hand sniff on the children's hands as they come in the door to make sure that they wash their hands. It just gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and it becomes a stranglehold. So one thing that, the way I think of it is, okay, so first year when I teach in a classroom, I say the girls are dismissed, and then the boys are dismissed. So they're trying to get them to get the ladies first idea. But then maybe next year, I need to not, kind of ignore that and go to something else rather than just adding. And if they still do it, great. Mm-hmm. But maybe not do too many accumulative things. I find I tend to do that, like just add and add and add. And when I realize that, then we started over and we had three rules. You wash your dishes after yourself and you make sure you respect others.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, you're talking about more procedures than academics, like adding
that's
more.
That's more what I'm referring
right.
to.
Yeah,
right.
Thanks, that clarifies it. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll just add the academic side of it then. I don't know if it's been a problem or not for sure, but I know I see myself doing that. Eventually I have too many irons in the fire and I can't do any of them well because I'm trying to add all these things. Oh, this would be neat, this would be neat. It's kind of what I think you mentioned that earlier, didn't you? Saying no sometimes.
So with that, I would encourage focusing. So this year we're going to stress grammar. This next year we're going to stress spelling. And I'm going to do extra sheets. Next year we're going to stress math, and I'm going to get throwing multiplication sheets at them all the time, and kind of take year to year. Especially when you have same students year after year, you can actually tighten up their weaknesses, but not grammar and spelling and math sheets all in the same year. I don't know. Maybe that works.
Okay, that's I like that idea. So you're saying this year let's really focus on improving spelling. Let next year be the one where we do extra math sheets regularly. You know something for this goes for all teachers, but I read that inspiration doesn't store well. So what we have going on this week, I look forward to this because it helps me get from summer mode back into school mode. I go back inspired. But this doesn't do me a lot of good in February. And so one of the things that I appreciate, I'll even purposely just go back and get my notes and look through them. And talk to another teacher about it. A lot of times you already know the answer, but you don't think about it until you're talking about it to someone else who's helping you bounce these things back and forth. So remember that inspiration doesn't store well. Even that good idea that I got from reading this book, by the time we get to where it would even apply to our lesson, I better go back and read it again so that it's fresh. Inspiration doesn't store well. I have another one here that I want to give you more chance. There's going to come a time when I need to quit teaching. It might not be when I'm just get too senile, simply. It might be when you feel like the Lord's calling you to something else. For me, when I got married, I had to weigh, well, can this fit together? And by the way, it can. Especially if your wife likes to score, it's actually better this way. But be prepared to make changes in teaching as other responsibilities in life come up. Teaching is not your life. I hate to break it to you. But Paul said, for me to live is Christ. And if that's true, then you could even stop teaching and still be okay. But if for me to live is, teaching is my identity, how are you going to stop? You can't. I had a friend. He was excellent at juggling. And one of the things that he did was juggle machetes. And he grabbed three long machetes. And he'd get those things where knife blades were just flashing. But one of the things Jeff always liked to do, he said, you know, I had a friend who did this. And he was really good at it, but he didn't know how to stop. We called him Stub for short. And, you know, you can be ever so skilled at juggling machetes, but if you can't stop gracefully, you kind of miss the point. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about career teachers being able to stop. And that's, I'm using the word career loosely there. One of the things that I just heard today that I appreciate, did you know that sometimes people who have taught a number of years actually feel guilty for even thinking of stopping teaching? Now, if you're babysitting and say, I feel God's calling me to go to Ukraine, oh, well, God bless you and go. But if you're school teaching, well, we need you here. Or sometimes, unfortunately, they probably wish we'd go. And someone told me just recently, they say, well, you can't fire a school teacher. Exactly. But his point was, on the job, if the concrete is curing too fast and you're over there playing on your cell phone, you're gone tomorrow. And if you have, you know, you're part of, okay, let's say we're part of a little bigger business and we see you not working when you should be working, we can write you up. And then the next time we see you you know, undermining the company. We can write you up and then you're gone. He said, there's no way we can do that with school teachers. Well, I hope, first of all, that they don't have to wish they could. But we need to, it kind of comes back to that whole thing of, are we under authority? So when we're talking about transitioning, let me just quickly, something that we do in our school is apprentice students as teachers. In my class, even by the time they get to eighth grade, they have opportunity to do quite a bit of public speaking, whether it's boys having devotions or whatever. And then we also have a teacher apprenticeship program so that they are not just checking papers, but putting a score on it. And they are teaching. I arrange with teachers in the other classrooms for them to come over and teach a class. And they come back saying, I did it. I said, well, how'd the students respond? Oh, well, this one, it just seems like they weren't getting it. I said, what'd you do about it? And they tell me. And it's so fun to hear. Sometimes I wish they'd be listening when they explain that to them. But so we also have these students go monitor other classrooms. And they've got a list, I got it straight from Handbook from Creative Teaching, of things that an apprentice is supposed to watch for as they go to another class. And so they're looking and they're noticing things on the walls. And they're noticing how the teacher starts each class. And they're noticing the seating arrangement. And they're noticing whether this teacher introduces the new concept in the same way their homeroom teacher does, or a completely different way. And there's things that they see that ordinarily it was just like, well, I don't know, she just taught the class. But now they're looking for something. They have a checklist there that they're checking out and writing their comments on. And they feel important. And they leave eighth grade feeling like, well, yeah, I could teach. I know about teaching. Well, they don't. But but my part of what I want to do, and we're going to talk about this more on the class on career teacher blessings, I want them to see, you know, teaching wouldn't be that bad. I want them to leave thinking, I wouldn't mind having a job where I could have fun like Mr. Miller does every day. I want them to see teaching as something attainable and enjoyable. A pitfall for me would be for me to have the impression and give them the impression that the only person that can do this is me. That's a career teacher pitfall, and we don't want to get into that. We don't want to get to where you would feel guilty for stopping, unless it's for purely selfish reasons. But just like someone who builds mini barns could do something else, so can school teachers. So sisters, if you really feel God's calling you to do something else, talk to people about it. Don't just decide on your own, well, see ya, but that's an option. Just know that's an option. Any comments on that?
It's pretty easy to feel almost trapped.
No.
You have a sense of loyalty, and as a board member, you want your teachers to feel loyal, pretty bad.
Right.
But then on the teacher side of it, so what is the board going to do? Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how to.
Okay, you feel trapped. You were going to say something.
Well, I just saw that saying that we should remember, I need to remember that the graveyards are full of indispensable men.
Graveyards are full of indispensable men.
And women, of course.
Right.
Sometimes, I just want to underscore, sometimes we trap ourselves. Like, we might think we're indispensable, but it's our sense of dedication. Like, we think that's the right thing to do. And I ended up burning out and basically having a mental breakdown in with that type of thing. And I just want to underscore the importance of having a mentor, talking to somebody else about your teaching, having them evaluate where you are and getting advice from them. Otherwise, you get trapped in your own perspective. And you might think it's a good, healthy perspective. Very important to have other input.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just repeat that to make sure we've got it. You can get trapped in your own perspective. Have a mentor, someone that you can talk to about your teaching. My temperament sometimes tells me how I feel about something rather than how something actually is. At the beginning of each day, commit this day to God for His glory, and then be open to the input of other people. Humbly go forward until God tells you He's got another project for you. God bless you in that. Thank you for listening.